Hello and welcome back to the official Scottish Rugby Podcast. I'm Jamie McMillan. With me, as always, are Al Kellock, Rachel Malcolm and Chris Patterson. And our special guest this week on the show is Scotland and Glasgow Warriors star Scott Cummings. Well, joining us on the podcast now for the very first time is Glasgow Warriors and Scotland star Scott Cummings. Scott, welcome to the podcast. How are you?
Yeah, good. Thank you. Thanks for having me. So, yeah, good. Looking forward to this.
Bright to have you on. I believe you've been at Scotstoun training today. We joke about Scotstoun always raining. Was it raining this morning during your session there?
It was, yes.
Of course it was. Al, when we talk about training sessions at Scotstoun, does it make you think back to the good old days when you're running out onto the soaking wet pitch? Good memories for you?
I generally don't know what you're talking about. It's always sunny in Glasgow. I'm looking out my window right now and the sun is splitting the sky. So, I don't know. It must have been just a wee enigma this morning, Scotty. It's not like great weather at Scotstoun, is it not, Scott?
It's all right. We've got the 3G pitch, so it's nothing too
3G
bad.
3G pitch, and then if the rain comes on at all, you boys just chip off inside now as well, don't you?
Yeah, but Matt for the lineouts.
So. Just in case it gets a bit cold.
And you said the good old days, Jamie. I thought you were going to go back to asking Al about training in the rain at White Craigs. Now they're talking.
Well, that's going fair back, but no, I wanted to keep it.
A few wet mornings out there, Al.
Incredible, Mossy. Place, Scott, that's well before your time, isn't it? But
yeah, White Craigs before my time, yeah.
Used to leave Glasgow and the sun was spotting the sky, or vice versa. Then you get to White Craigs and it would be its own microclimate up there. And then, yeah, there was some, but we used to time it well. It was Sean Lennon's thing when you used to show players around. So Darryl Gibson, let's take Darryl Gibson as an example, reasonably high profile All Black. Sean would invite him up. I think he would check the long-term weather forecast, invite him up to look around Glasgow and the sun would be spotting the sky. And then Darryl would get to like the middle of December. He's not seen the sun in 2 months. And he's like, what's going on here? Well, hey, it's Glasgow. It's always sunny.
Always sunny.
Well, speaking of Glasgow, I think, Scott, you joined Glasgow Warriors, remind me, in 20... Well, you came through the academy, but you officially, your debut against Connacht. What year was that?
Yeah, I think it was around sort of September 2015.
So did you and Al play together at all, or did you get a chance to run about with Al?
I had one great opportunity to run about with Al. It was actually an A game, I'm pretty sure.
Al never played A.
Stirling County.
Oh, well, we're not in the back pitch of the Edinburgh.
Yeah, this is your last game, Al. This is where it broke your heart.
Scott, this is a true story. Al's talked about this before. This is the game that broke him.
Bust my hand that game. Looks still bust.
So that's the only time you two would have played together would have been in the back pitches at Edinburgh.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, because I think you retired pretty much after I...
Like, in the car park.
You retired me, Scott.
Yeah, I was going to say after he realised he had some stiff competition coming through.
I waved him on the way out the door. Just turned around and saw him hanging his shirt up in my old dressing spot.
I can't believe it's that long ago, Scott. I know it sounds like 5 years, but I mean, you've crammed a massive amount in, but I just thought it'd be 2 or 3 years, but that puts you in the kind of evergreen stroke experience camp. I thought it was 5 years ago.
Oh, I know. It's a bit weird because I feel a bit older now. I'm only 23, so it's not as hardly as if I'm old. But yeah, obviously Glasgow, like there's now that sort of all those young guys that are coming through that are even younger that I don't feel the young one now. So it's a bit.
Nah, you must still feel young. Richie Gray's back. He's about my age. Okay. How is Big Richie? Have you taken him under your wing, Scotty?
He's taking under us. I don't think it's that way, but he's been good. Nah, he's been really good. He's enjoying getting back, I think. So, he's been good.
I know we'll maybe come on to it later, but have any of you pair been on your second row mate Swinnell after his exploits the last couple of weeks?
I sent him a message a while back, a couple of weeks ago, but I haven't talked to him since he started the two games. So,
it's good. He's done well. It's quarter final and semi final Champions Cup, and he's tracking on.
Callum on our hill as well on the bench, which is
Chunter came on as well, did well. I know,
yeah,
loads of Scottish second rows.
I know,
yeah.
You mentioned a few boys there, so Cam Hunter Hill and a few others, but you would have played with them, Scotty, on your journey through age grade. So, you know, captain Thunder 20s, you know, to remind us some of the boys that you played with who are now featuring in Glasgow, Edinburgh, and beyond.
Or if we look at, just for example, our pack, we had Money McCallum's at Edinburgh, Jake Kerr's Leicester, Xander, me, Andrew Davidson, Callum Underhill, Jamie Ritchie, Magnus, George Horn, Adam Hastings. I mean,
it's amazing when you go through that and you just remind people how good that 20 side was. You must have a fond memories, not just from playing in the World Championships. And there was great wins against huge teams, but you know, the guys you're playing with now at Glasgow, you played with at age grade. So how much does that help you now that you've played with these guys for a long period of time?
Yeah, it definitely helps. Obviously, sort of knowing everyone and knowing how everyone plays, and you know, you can see a lot of that young sort of group that we played 20s with are now sort of pushing into the Scotland camp as well. And you know, it's great having familiar faces around and guys that you know well, and you know, you know are going to give what they give in the pitch. So,
yeah. Speaking of the Scotland camp, you've obviously had a bit of a kind of whirlwind journey into that in the last couple of years. How would you describe that experience?
Yeah, it's been a bit crazy. Yeah, obviously, at the end of, so I suppose it'd be two seasons ago, the year that we made the final, got, you know, we went into the World Cup camp after that, and at that point, obviously hadn't played yet. I'd been involved in a couple of camps before, but sort of wee bits here and there, but this was my first sort of year in the squad and really fighting for the place. So, that was great, and obviously managed to push through and get my first cap out in France, which was amazing. Obviously, the result didn't quite go our way that day. But you know, it was obviously an amazing experience for me, and to go on and then play at Murrayfield at home the week after was absolutely amazing. So, man, it's just sort of seemed rolled on there for me. And yeah, going out to Japan was sort of a dream come true, something that I've dreamed of playing in a World Cup. So to get to go out and do that was absolutely amazing. So
that you mentioned the final, the final against Leinster two seasons ago. That was almost, well, for me, like one of your defining moments of your career, because absolute standing on the field, tough day against Leinster, tough conditions. But in terms of trying to bring energy, bring a dynamic ball carrying ability, I just thought in a losing side, it, you know, had an outstanding game, and that must have given you a lot of confidence. But I actually think that was, as I say, one of the defining moments that, you know, a lot of, I suppose, selectors and coaches looked up and thought, actually, he's played so well, we can't leave him out. And then you go on to feature in all four games in the World Cup, well, the World Cup warm-ups and the World Cup game. So how did you prepare any differently for that final, or did it just click? Did you just love that big stage?
No, didn't really. It was pretty much the same for me. I'm one of these guys that can get myself worked up pretty easily about playing. So I don't think about the game until like literally a couple of hours before that. I'm trying to keep my mind off it, play whatever I can. So I didn't prepare any differently, and I wouldn't say there was playing any differently. I think it's just when you get that atmosphere, and you know, one thing that was that I loved the most was actually the drive to the game. We all met at Scotstoun and got the bus over to Celtic Park, and just seeing the amount of fans that were there that were Glasgow supporters, and obviously we've got an amazing following at Scotstoun, but for that to be tripled, you know, four or five times what we were used to, and most of the people supporting Glasgow, was just amazing, and that sort of boosted you up a bit, which did give you that sort of extra bit to go. So,
I completely agree with Mossy. I remember watching that game, and for me, and we've talked about it on this podcast, for me, you were the best player in the Glasgow shot that day, and I won't ask you to comment on that. But when you look back on that as well, did you see it as a performance, a step up, or are we just kind of old and nostalgic?
Not really. Obviously, at the end of the day, we lost. So individual performance, you don't always see individual performance when the team loses. You know, not you see it, but it's hard to sometimes be like, oh yeah, I played well, but we lost. So at the end of the day, I was gutted about how the game went, because I felt like there was so much that we sort of left out there and didn't put into practice what we've been training all week. And obviously, the conditions did come into play with it. But so, yeah, I feel like I had an okay game, but I wasn't like, oh, this is it for me. This is like the big moment or anything. Pretty much because
it's when you look at the journey over the next 6 months journey, but then I suppose it was the lockdown period. But it was a game that, you know, everybody looks at big players, and you only become a big player when you start playing well in the big and important games. And for you to step up in that game, and as you say, the result didn't go the right way, and it's very difficult to reflect on it probably personally. But it was the start of an incredible journey. As Mossy touched on there, your own World Cup journey, I mean, it wasn't like you were going into that camp as a shoe, and you had to battle hard to get that space in the plane, and then went, and you must have been incredibly proud of the way you played, but also must have been a fantastic experience.
Yeah. So obviously going into that first camp, my end goal was to make the squad, but I was trying not to think about that and just trying to think of each day training. And obviously it was quite a long warm-up camp, and when it came to the games, I was, at the time, to be perfectly honest, I was just happy about getting my first cap. Mm-hmm. If that would have been, it's still been an amazing experience up to that, if I'd just made those warm-up games. And then obviously, I think it was after the second game where we played France, and Gregor was like, right, we might take 4 second rows, we might only take 3. So like, coming off the bench against Georgia, we want to see you do stuff, if you know what I mean. So for me, I was just trying to get the ball as much as I could when I got on.
Drop balls.
Yeah, so I felt like in those, and then that last game against Georgia that we played at home, my idea was just get the ball in my hands as much as I can, because that is sort of my point of difference, is being able to run sort of lines and carry that sort of way. So for me, that's something I can still improve on. I feel like maybe I don't do it quite enough in games. So going forward, that's something I know I can keep improving on and really make that my sort of selling point.
And just on that point about the Georgia game, you know, that's the final game before you go away. And I think even Gregor had named the squad to go to the World Cup before that game as well, hadn't he? So, but this is kind of an open question to everyone, because I haven't experienced it. But do you guys, when you go into games like that, knowing that you're in the squad, you're selected for something, but you've still got to go over another hurdle, what's the kind of, is there anything that goes through your head, like mentally, like, is there a worry, a fear of injury, or like, how does your mindset have to change for that game?
I think there's always a fear of injury regardless of the game, but no, I think a little bit, but I think as soon as you get out there and you've got, you know, a thistle on your chest, you're just out there for one reason, regardless of what the meaning behind the game is, if that makes sense. And kind of like individual motivations and stuff like that get cast aside, and you kind of, it's things you think about a lot before and a lot you reflect on after, but I think when you're in the moment, it kind of all goes away and it's just out for the team.
Yeah, I agree. The game's easy bit because you've got a clear and absolute focus that you have to, you know, get on with. There's not enough kind of brain capacity to deal with everything else other than what's in the task in hand, which is the game. So the game's easy in terms of being focused on it. It's a dead time before and after, and I can't remember who it was, Al, you remember, 2011 World Cup squad got announced, and obviously disappointed players, but there's elated players as well, and everybody that was the selected to go was celebrating, and it might have been Dan Parks, it might have been Parksy, and he just looked a wee bit anxious, and everyone, what's wrong, Parksy? Oh, still to get up those stairs onto the flight. Like, he was actually worried about getting onto the flight in case he fell down the stairs. Like, so stuff outside, away from the game, off the pitch is fine, but it's more difficult than on the field because you've got such a pure focus. But yeah, he worried right up those that air bridge, right up the stairs onto the flight.
Carriage back from it can be difficult, Jamie. Like, the worst one I ever experienced was 2011. I think it was Six Nations, and Andy Robinson asked me to skip up the squad throughout the Six Nations, but I hadn't gone out, wasn't shared, and I hadn't played much rugby in the build up to it. So it's like, we think you need another game. Do you think you need another game? And it was Glasgow versus the Dragons away on the Friday night before the first game, and it was one of those ones. Yeah, I probably did need the rugby, so I said yes, let's go down and play. I was meant to play 40-50 minutes. And only Mossy saying that you don't realise in the game, I realised at 70 minutes when I looked up at the clock thinking, I'm not meant to still be here. I got dragged after about 5 minutes after that, but I played 75 out of the 80. I was nervous in the build up to it because it was clearly a big moment, so it can be tough. And it's a difficult one from a selection point of view as well. Like, Gregor obviously did it slightly different by naming that squad earlier. It allows you to set on as a squad. But you're bound to have half an eye on the play and half an eye on getting there. Maybe until the whistle goes and then you carry on as normal.
Quite funny you mentioned Andy Robinson there. But that was something similar. Did you say that was the first experience of being captain? You'd asked to be captain
I think it was my I'd skippered the tour and then
Six Nations is coming.
And then I didn't play in the autumns. I'd blow my knee out, so that was me just coming back. And it was a build up to the Six Nations where he'd asked me a few weeks before. I think that was the way it went.
Well, Andy did something similar to me, in the hotel in Edinburgh. The 2 days after my 99th cap. So if I was selected on the Tuesday, I'd be winning my 100th cap in Cardiff. And he said, listen, could I need a meeting on the Monday evening? It was about 10 o'clock on the Monday night. And he said to me, he says, I'm just not sure you're ready. Do you think you're ready for this game? I'm going to sleep in it. And I thought, do you think I'm ready? I'm on the eve of winning my 100th cap here, Andy. Come on, cut me some slack. If there's a moment where you kind of maybe want a heads up before the morning, you want a decent night's sleep, he says, no, I'm going to sleep in it. I'm going to sleep in it. I'm not sure if you'll be ready. So being me, obviously just booted the table, stormed out in a rage. Man, worried all night, and then I was a wee bit happy in the morning when my name was read out. So these coaches, they like to keep you on edge, Scotty.
It must
like
be Robbo with that sleep on it, because he did it to me in the build-up to World Cup. We played our last warm-up game. I knew he was going. What he had named was his skipper, and he grabbed me about half ten the night before.
I said, it's late at night. Put your foot
to sleep. He says, just to let you know, I'm...
Just so you can't sleep.
Exactly. I'm pretty sure what I'm going to do. He didn't like let me know what he was... I'm pretty sure what I'm going to do, but I'm going to sleep on it one more night, and you're like... Oh, come on.
Have you ever had the sleep in it chat, Scott, for a selector?
Thankfully not. Coach? I've never had those. I've had a lot of
come. It'll come.
A lot of last minute call-ins. You know, 10, 15 minutes before a game. So.
Well, it's a nice way of moving on to coaches and head coaches. You've got a new team in there as well, and Danny, but also KB. Now, you wouldn't have played at all with Kelly, but you would have watched Kelly. I know you came to games when you were growing up as well. That makes you sound really old, but like you would have seen him play an awful lot as well. How's it been starting with Kelly? How's it been having him in the camp?
Yeah, it's been great. He obviously has great experience he's had at Saracens, being a winning team. So he's bring a lot of the things that the wee technical things that they do well, and trying to install him into us, basically. Not saying that we're going to play the exact same way as them, but just things that he always talks about, like hard work beats talent. So there's small things like kick chases and breakdown work, just all those sort of really small technical things he's really trying to like build into us and try and get those habits into us. So no, he's fitting really well. I've done a wee bit of work with him at Scotland camps. He was one of the coaches over the past couple of years. He's dropped in and out, so... No, he's settled in well, and I think he's enjoying it, so good to have him.
And does he mostly do kind of individual stuff, one-on-one stuff? It'd be great to pick the brain for somebody who's played so recently. That obviously will coach unit as well, but he would work on one-on-one stuff as well. He can get valuable experience there.
Yeah, so obviously his role at Glasgow is really the breakdown work and getting that clean ball, which... Mm-hmm. It's sort of pivotal to the way that we play. We're all about speed and tempo and, you know, getting the ball moving as quick as we can. But a lot of teams think that comes from, you know, just star players, offloads and all that. But a lot of it actually just comes from breakdown work and the most efficient team there is in that. And you look at teams like Leinster, for example, that are so clinical at the breakdown. And that's how they're able to go through the millions of phases they do. So, yeah, he's bringing a lot of his experience into that side of it. And he's, like you said, he's obviously a great guy to have one-on-one. And he can sort of give you tips and tricks that he's went through in his playing career. So,
I'd be the same with you, Rachel, as well. That contact area is just so... It's just so dominant in the game now, isn't it? Like, if you get that right, and it can just be an individual thing, if you get that right, the knock-on effect on how you can attack certainly is massive.
Yeah, definitely. And similar to the way Glasgow play, the way that my club team and also Scotland women want to play is like real fast rugby. So getting that, as you say, as efficient as possible is the best way to do that. And I think especially this season we've never spent so much time on the contact area as we have this year because of, I guess, the new kind of interpretations of the laws and stuff as well. Mm-hmm. Because it is now even more so like an opportunity for defensive teams to get ball back, I guess. So in attack, we've got to be even better than we've ever been, really. So I think, I don't know how Scott's found it in terms of coming back in recently, but the focus on it's been massive for us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that really should be your focus, but I think that is something that every team's focus really has to be now, because you can practice all this catch, pass, all these elaborate plays we can, but if you can't win the ball, clean ball, then we're not going to be able to play the way we want to play. So,
Scott, is it going back to more about speed than accuracy? Like, is it purely about winning the race now again, of Scotty and Rachel, or because it seems to me that you win the race, you win the ball. Like, there's less. Used to be all about having a perfect clear out.
If you win the race, as long as you're legal, if you win the race and dive off your feet, you'll be pinged. But I'd imagine we're a bit of both, win the race, but still need that accuracy in what you're delivering.
I obviously haven't played yet, but in terms of like how we've been doing it in training, I'd say we're now getting the balance between two better. Mm-hmm. And that's what I'd say is the difference probably, is that it's not just about either flying in or going in and doing a really good technical. It's a bit of both and getting the balance right. But I don't know, Scott, what have you found in terms of like obviously taking it into games and stuff?
Yeah, one of the things for us is one of the sort of things under Dave Rennie was winning races in sharp lines. So we were probably one of those teams that the new rules come in against. Probably we were probably coming in at slightly questionable angles last year. it wasn't getting policed. So at the time, fine with it. But obviously that's something new that we're bringing in, that's been brought in. So we've had to adapt to that, change our ways. And I think we saw in that first Edinburgh game, those sort of first half hour, we weren't on the money with it. I think there was quite a lot we get given away. We were sort of snowballing through it. So for us, I think we've spent so much time on it now. We've got it accurate, and you know, we've got our key things that we need to focus on the breakdown, which means that we're now within the rules and actually getting quite well. So
mention that first Edinburgh game, and you talk about Danny a wee bit. Mossy and I were both doing commentary for those games, and one thing we said was you probably don't see a huge amount of Danny Wilson's influence in the team coming through at that stage. He's still new into it. He's got to find out about you boys. Will we see some more this weekend, Scott? Is there going to be massive changes or just subtle changes, do you believe, as to a Dave Rennie versus a Danny Wilson?
Yeah, there will be some changes. I think when Danny first came in, what he was telling us was, I can't change everything in 3-4 weeks for Edinburgh. So what he was saying is, we're going to keep a lot of stuff the same, but there's certain things that we need to fix straight away from what his vision of the team is. So just certain things like how to exit, different ways, maybe different, we kept most of the playing style the same. And one of the things is just focusing a lot more on defence, you know, just making that really a building block for us. So all that sort of stuff came in. But I think now that we've had another sort of 4 weeks to build on more of Danny's vision and more of, you know, all the coaches' visions, I think there is some stuff we'll do differently, but we'll still be looking to play that same attack and mindset that we have. So,
and it's Connacht first up, isn't it, on Saturday evening away from home. So they like to play. They've got a kind of an open, expansive game. Always, I suppose, caveated by the weather out there. It can get some pretty wet and windy nights in the Galway coast. It does have a massive effect, but I assume there'll be opportunities for your defence to get set against a team that like to play, but also opportunities to try and steal ball, if we're talking about the breakdown, and get that attack and philosophy up and running as well. So it'd be a big challenge, but actually quite an exciting one for Glasgow.
Yeah. First up, Connacht. You know, we always seem to get Connacht first up. It'll be a great day. Obviously, we've been chomping at the bit to get back for the past couple of weeks. So we've been doing a lot of internal contact and stuff like that to get us ready for it. So we're excited for it. Connacht love to chuck the ball about. You know, it all comes back from when Pat Lamb was that corner and instilled that sort of mindset in them. So they'll look to play. They'll keep the ball alive as much as they possibly can. So we'll obviously need to slow them down and not allow them to have too much chaos in the game and keep it structured so that we can impose our game as well on them.
Played much out in Galway, Scotty?
I have, yeah. Probably about 4 or 5 times, actually, yeah. Yeah, I was out there 2 years ago. It's really weird because sometimes it's lovely and then sometimes it's absolutely horrible. So I remember, like, 3 years ago, I went, bright sunshine, no wind at all. And then I think it was about same time the next year, and it was gale.
I mean, we played the semi-final game was over there as well, wasn't it? Where Finn took the bad knock, and it was a glorious day that day. But you're dead right; it can be mix and match. Now you're clearly an athlete, but it's, and unfortunately there's no spectators. But it's a nice place to go and enjoy a pint of Guinness as well, post game, obviously.
Scotty, Pro 14 kicks off this weekend, but you know, big changes happening in the international scene as well with the launch of the Autumn Nations Cup. It all sounds very exciting. It's a new competition. How much are you and everybody else looking forward to hopefully playing a part in this new initiative?
Yeah, really excited about it. I think, obviously, with the Six Nations not finishing, it's great to get that finally finished. You know, actually have our standing, because we felt like we were really building at the end of that Six Nations and really getting towards where we sort of wanted to be as a team. So really excited to get to finish that game, and then new tournament, getting to play France, Italy, and then Fiji, is it? Yeah. that'll be, you know, three teams that play all sort of different style of rugby, but all fast rugby, and it'll be an exciting time for us, hopefully. So
I think one of the changes, or the slight changes, is the fact that there'll only be two league games prior to the internationals, really. Is that right? I think they're two Pro 14 games. So we're usually, one of the biggest blocks of the season is from week one or pre-season, and then week one or the campaign ahead of the autumn test. So you maybe have like 9 games, 10 games before there's international games. But with only two club games, it's going to be really important to get off individually to a fast start, but to get up to speed as well. So it's another challenge for the players this year to, I suppose, they've had a lot of time to prepare, but just get off to a good start. And I suppose some of your direct competitors, Scott, have been playing, say somebody like Johnny, he's been playing last, what,
yeah,
5 weeks, 6 weeks as well. So it's important to get off to a flyer, isn't it?
Yeah, it will be. You know, for me, I know it's a cliche, probably a lot of everyone says that, but you know, I've just been focusing on Glasgow and you know, what I can do for that first game, and you know, if I get selected for that, just try and put in my best performance I can. And you know, we're really excited to get out there and play again, which I think most of the people in Scotland are. You know, we're all just chomping at the bit to get back playing. Yeah, we've only got 2 weeks to try and show what we can do, basically. So got to try and put your best foot forward as much as we can. So.
And then in terms of build up with Scotland, what's it looking like, do you know, in terms of training camps and stuff ahead of that first game?
I really got no idea. we've got the two games, and then I think there's a camp basically two or three days after that last game, but I don't know when the squad's getting announced after that second game, so I think it'll be quite a quick turnaround if selected. So
because you boys wouldn't have been back together since obviously that Six Nations finish against Wales, which never was.
No, we've not seen any of the guys since that long bus trip back from Wales. So yeah, no, it'll be good to see them all, and good to get back into that camp environment as well. So,
Scotty, Mossy, just to cut through it a wee bit, Mossy mentions there that one of your biggest competitors, which is entirely right, because you're both going for that second host spot, also a teammate as well, though, in Johnny Gray. Where do you sit on that? Like, you mentioned that Andrew Davidson earlier on, he's now over at Edinburgh. You had an opportunity to know each other incredibly well in the first game. Are you going out your way to land a few shots? Are you looking forward to getting back into camp with Johnny, who you've worked with closely, and you know, just making sure you know he knows who's top dog? Or how does your mentality work towards it?
Not really.
We don't want any nice answers here. We want the honest truth about who you're lining up.
Obviously, going into camp, you know, you know, at the end of the day, you're fighting for position. You know, as much as you're as a team, you are fighting for that position on the pitch. So I wouldn't say you give extra anything against an opposite player in the same position, but I think it's just about going out there and showing what you got, if you know what I mean, and not holding back, and whether that means you're a bit selfish and trying to cut in from not more reps or something, or whether, if it, for example, and forwards are going to maul constantly, probably. So situations like that, just giving everything you got in those sort of situations to show what you can do, basically, I think is the main thing for me.
Especially when you've only got two games. Al, do you know what I mean? Like, that training is always massively important, but you know, with, I don't know, maybe one training camp and then a few days preparation, to change the selector's eyes or the coach's eyes, you know what I mean? It's every opportunity with so few games is a golden opportunity to lay, you know, lay a foundation, stamp your authority.
Yeah, absolutely. You've got a decent amount of competition at Glasgow as well. Are you doing what I used to do? You telling Leone he's a six?
he's an eight.
He's an eight.
Barley as well. Just well.
Scotty, brilliant to have you on the podcast. Best of luck with the Pro 14 this weekend away to Connacht. All the best, Scotty.
Cheers, guys. Thanks for having me.
Cheers, Scotty.
Guys, great to hear from Scotty for the first time. He has achieved a lot, hasn't he? And yeah, Mossy, you mentioned it in that, but you think about the timeline he's been through. He's done a lot for a young age, but even at that age, he's still very grounded, and he's actually got quite a mature head in his shoulders, hasn't he?
Yeah, the way he plays and the way he kind of conducts himself, absolutely. As I said, he came through the academies, and you knew that it was just really comfortable in terms of leading, in terms of calling lineouts, in terms of taking on information and adapting. But the way I think he's probably accelerated quicker than I thought he maybe would, because given an opportunity, just this dynamic ball carrying ability, and he said himself, like hitting, it's brilliant to see big guys like that aiming at space between defenders rather than just kind of blindly running wherever the kind of ball is, and more often than not getting hit in contact man and ball. He actually is really cute and explosive at these lines that takes him between defenders. And more often not, his timing of the ball is excellent. He's clean through. So, yeah. So I think like having that kind of explosive power and that ability to run like almost like a classic midfielder, you say, or a fullback hitting lines, I think is excellent. And it does, he said it himself, set him apart a little bit from a lot of others in that second row battle. And he didn't just do it once in the final. He stepped up again and then stepped up again. And then, as I say, played involved in all four World Cup games. And again, Six Nations, it takes a lot of responsibility. So you're right, to achieve all that in a short space of time and with more to come, I think it's really positive.
I think being quite, you can tell he's quite a modest guy. And I think having been given a lot of those opportunities so early in his career has probably actually accelerated him through, because having that kind of confidence put in you from a coach, selector, whatever it may be, will give him that confidence to go. And that's why we've probably seen more of those kind of attributes from him in the last kind of two seasons compared to maybe the start of his career. And he has really improved dramatically and having really standout performances with that.
I think I agree completely. He's been brilliant. I think that at 23 years old, to not only play the way he plays, but also what he does to the other people around about him. Like, he's leading lineouts at you know, 22.
Does he call the lineouts as well, Ali? Doesn't he?
Yeah, he does. And it was a slight transition. He came in, he was a young guy, obviously. It came very naturally to him because he's done it from a young age. But it's quite unusual for a guy who's experienced, but not clearly as experienced as some of the guys he's alongside, to take that on, because it's a big challenge for him to, you know, put that on top of the added pressure of just playing the game. But like, I think that not only is he incredibly talented rugby player, very intelligent rugby player. Also, you make the point about the running lines. Like, he's smart with the way he carries the ball, and he's got a big role leadership wise as well. But because of the way he plays the game, people look at him. People look at him and they look to him for guidance. So, 23. I mean, he's incredibly young for a guy that's playing the way he is.
Rach, today when we're recording this, it's 25 days until the Women's Six Nations gets going again. You must be delighted to hear that news, and just, I bet you can't wait to get going again.
Yeah, I can't wait for pre-season to be over, to be honest with you. We're absolutely buzzing to get going. We've been back in camp now as well, which immediately just makes you want to get back out in the pitch with the girls as well. So yeah, we're starting to build and get back to it. And we got France first up, which is going to be a bit of a baptism of fire, I think, is the first game, but the best way to start, because dropping yourself in the deep end when you've been away for such a long time is brilliant, and it will show where we need to improve and areas where we're doing well as well. So yeah, can't wait to get going.
How long's the pre-season been, Rachel? We've been on this podcast for weeks and weeks and weeks, and it's been pre-season every week. It must be,
yeah,
what, 3 months?
At least, like, because we had a pre-season
4 months.
The lockdown, we trained the whole way through, which is good, because it kept you kind of occupied and whatever else. But and then we've been back in training for, I think we might be on our fourth block of like gym programs, so wow, almost over three four months, something like that. So yeah, it's been brilliant though. Like, the vibe in terms of our club stuff's been great, and we've had a great pre-season. But you know, that last couple of weeks of beasting when you're just like, right, we need to get to game day now. But no, it's been good, and like I say, all the girls are in great shape and on really good form as well, getting back into camps. We're back in again this weekend. Yeah, so 2 day camp this weekend again, just to kind of build on what we did. Obviously the last camp and keep moving forward. So yeah, exciting times.
Talking to Scotty there, Glasgow start their campaign for the Guinness Pro 14 away to Connacht. Edinburgh start at home against the Ospreys. Now it's a quick turnaround, isn't it? It's only one weekend really without rugby for Edinburgh, so they're back into it. But the focus switches from a kind of knockout focus from semi-finals or quarter-finals to round one of a new season. So it will be a different mental focus, but it's really important that Edinburgh get off to a good start after Ospreys. I think their second game's away in Munster, which will be pretty challenging, as it always is. But Munster have made big name signings over the lockdown as well. So it's an important game for Edinburgh. Ospreys are on paper pretty strong, but I think Edinburgh will be hurting so much that they're gonna get off to a bang. Eh?
Well, that was going to be my point. Like, is it the sweet spot of, you know, it's still fresh in our mind, so it's about, right, we can get on and fix this straight away? Or do you need a bit of time to put it to bed? It's probably the first, and the second one potentially is further down the line, because it's going to feel like a long old season for these guys. Now, if things are going well, that's brilliant. There's no issue there at all. But if you do have down times, then I think, you know, physically and mentally there'll be a lot of pressure put on them that ordinarily wouldn't been put on. But yeah, to your point, Moshe, like, it seems as if that being fresh in our mind would be a good thing, and they'll go out there and they'll have things to fix straight away.
It's going to be disrupted for international withdrawals from the club or international fixtures for the players. There's going to be a lot of transition and change at Glasgow and Edinburgh in terms of player availability. Who knows what will happen to the current restrictions in terms of players being unavailable due to positive tests or being linked to positive tests. So it is going to be disruptive, and I think what becomes more important than ever, and we say this every year, but this year I think it's more important to get consistency in your season. I think you have to win all your home games. But we say that anyway, and pick up what you can away from home. But with the more disruptions, I think home form is really crucial, and Edinburgh have that opportunity this week to kick that off with a home win against Ospreys. Picking up results away from home is obviously going to be the determining factor across the board, but that, I don't think you can afford to lose many home games if you want to be in with a shout, because you don't know, who knows, that the league may, you know, be paused for a couple of weeks, or it may pick up later on. Get those home wins are really important.
Well, another news, we have two players nominated for European Player of the Year, our very own Stuart Hogg and Finn Russell. Great to see them both get the nod. When you look at the other nominees, fairly good chance for either of them.
We're not talking other nominees, it's between those two.
right. Quite good answer.
You think they'll vote for each other?
I think they'll vote for themselves.
Yeah, well, yeah, I think so as well.
There's something wrong. You can't vote for yourself in that.
How's the voting done on it? Is it?
Surely you can't vote for yourself.
But no, Marcy, I've never been nominated.
But, no, good point, Rachel. I don't know how it is. Is it a panel? Is it? Does anyone know how the process takes place?
No. Tell what, you look into it, Jamie.
I'll look into it, and by next year we'll definitely know how it's done.
No, I think it's great to like two players who obviously will be playing in the final as well, hopefully, if all goes well. Exeter and Racing. And they're both players, quite rightly, that have had a massive impact on their team's progress to the final. Semi Radradra is in the shortlist as well. He's had a big impact for a couple of teams, really, across Europe this year, with Bordeaux and Bristol. But let's hope it falls on a Scotsman's shoulder, because they've had a big influence, and some of the biggest moments of the Champions Cup season have came from those two.
Yeah, there's not a weekend goes by where you're not talking about one of them. You know, Finn's chip from this weekend, all the great stuff Hoggy's done in an extra jersey. It's brilliant. It really is brilliant to have them on that shortlist, and also to have five players, Scottish players, in that final as well. You know, that's another big statement to make, to show that the guys are playing at the very, very top of the game, and it must be good for Gregor. He must be looking at that, I think, well, apart from the fact they've got another game of rugby, but they'll be coming in full of confidence and full of self-belief in their own ability, which can only help when they pull on the national jersey.
I've just been told by our producer, Claire, that apparently part of the nominees is down to the public. So the public have voted or have a say. So they've definitely had a Finn Russell and Stuart Hogg have been pushed by the fans as well. But no, you're right. It's great to have two nominees. And as Gregor will rightly be delighted that he's going to have medals in the camp for the first time in a long time in the European Games. So brilliant. Guys.
How many medals are you going to be in the camp? Is it going to be four medals or one?
Well, it depends on who he picks for his squad, doesn't it? Because there's
Let's assume that they all get picked. They might not, but let's assume.
Saying who's going to win the final?
Who's going to win the final?
Who do I think will win? If I was to throw a wild guess, I would say Racing.
Similar game to Racing Toulouse, and that Toulouse came out 100 miles an hour, chucked everything at them. But then Exeter soaked it all up. Sorry, Exeter Toulouse. So Exeter soaked it all up and then controlled that game. So
I
think they've got the blueprint. I think that's exactly the same way it needs to go for Exeter to win it.
Would Racing be more powerful than Toulouse in terms of physicality up front? If they are, I think Racing would win. If they're not, then probably Exeter take it then on the same blueprint as that.
That was brilliant. You answered that without even answering it. Terrific.
I answered it. And then unanswered it.
That's why he's the best.
I've got similar views to the boys. Yeah, it's real hard because they are actually quite different teams. Mm-hmm. But both brilliant, obviously, in their own right. I've watched a lot more of Exeter than I have Racing. All you ever see of Racing is flair. Mm-hmm. But I think Exeter might grind it out and get the win.
So I believe the five nominated finalists, you can then vote for it. But what I don't know is if you can vote for both Finn and for Hoggy.
You can go on and vote. I believe voting is reopened. If you go to apcrugby.com/epoty, which I presume means something relevant to the... Yep. Epoty. apcrugby.com/epoty. And you can vote for your favourite player, Finn or Hoggy.
Have you got that, Ackerman, yet?
I genuinely haven't got it. I'm looking at it right now.
No. I knew he didn't have it.
Oh, European Player of the Year.
Yes, well done. Fantastic.
There we go. On that
definitely
note,
stays in.
Support Scotland this season as one. Scottish Rugby has introduced a new membership for fans at home and abroad to back the sport in Scotland during the COVID-19 pandemic. Sign up for Scotland now at scottishrugby.org. That's all from us this week on the official Scottish Rugby podcast. As always, thank you so much for listening. We'll be back next week with more exclusive content.